are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents, and students worldwide.
What is it that makes your school unique, and how much of that can you still retain while being online?
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Julie Keys, aka the Educational Consultant, a teacher by trade for 15 years and now runs her own educational consultancy. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are the unique experience of prep schools, entrepreneurial spirit in education, and school cultures Julie would like to see continue when things return to normal.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am interviewing Julie Keys. Hi Julie, good morning.
Hi.
Could you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell everybody what you do?
Morning Ross, thank you so much for having me on. My name is Julie Keys, otherwise known as the Educational Consultant, and I am a teacher by trade, but now have started my own education consultancy. It's very new.
Okay, and how long have you been doing this for?
A year and a half.
Okay, so very new. And how long were you in the kind of classroom, so to speak?
15 years.
Okay, and could you just give us a brief snapshot of your professional life?
Yeah, I'd love to. I went into teaching straight after university. So I was at UCL, and then I went to the Institute of Education, and I kind of had my heart set actually when I was at university on becoming a nurse. My dad said, why don't you go and see if you could spend 6 months changing bedpans and then come back and tell me if you still want to be a nurse? And I said, oh, all right, okay. But in the meantime, I found a placement teaching at a sixth form college in Islington while I was still doing my degree. And I just loved it. I just loved it. And I thought, actually, I think I can help people in a different way. And so teaching was what I sort of decided I was going to do. And actually the Institute of Education is in the same building as the geography department, which was what I was studying.
Okay.
So I just moved a few blocks of concrete down the road to the Institute of Education and did my secondary PGCE in geography. Okay. There.
And so you qualified in London. Did you stay teaching in London?
Well, both of my teacher practices were in London. And then after that, I moved back to Kent to a large comp in Sevenoaks. And actually, Sevenoaks is where I grew up. So I was quite familiar with that area, but not necessarily with that school.
Okay.
And there I was teaching geography, obviously. But they also said to me, would you mind teaching a little bit of ICT? And I thought, well, all right, I'll give it a go. Somehow I ended up teaching all the way through from Key Stage 3 to Key Stage 4 GCSEs ICT, but actually became a real strength.
You've got experience in leadership?
Yes, I have. So, I mean, after that time, what I really realised was that actually I really enjoyed being with the younger pupils. I really loved being with my year sevens and year eights. Key Stage 3 was really where I thrived, but I loved my subject. So I didn't want to be a primary school teacher. I wanted to be a secondary school teacher, but I wasn't massively into teaching sixth form, for example. I found a really happy medium, which was I then went and taught in a prep school, which is sort of like teaching in a middle school, really.
Yeah.
Because it meant that I could, this was still in Sevenoaks.
Okay.
And it meant that I could teach my subject, which I loved, but to a slightly lower age range, which again was just hit the sweet spot for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was teaching there. And then when we left there, we went and moved abroad and we lived in Malaysia for 3 years. And I was teaching at international school there. And there I was head of humanities for the prep school.
Okay.
So I kind of oversaw those three departments and was obviously still teaching geography. And then when I left there, when I came back to the UK, I was then deputy head and director of studies at another prep school. So that's sort of my experience, really.
Uh-huh. And then can I push you back a little bit further, just unpick your own education?
Yeah, of course. My own education. I have to say that this is part of the reason that I love education, because I actually went to school in Sevenoaks. I went to Sevenoaks School, really big kind of private independent school, but very forward thinking, very modern, very international, always sort of pushing the boundaries. It was the first UK school to be fully IB. I was an IB student. I just loved being at Sevenoaks. It was the best educational experience of my life. And I was a boarder there, and I owe so much to the boarding community. I mean, they pretty much raised me, I would say.
Okay. And so then university next?
University next, yeah. I went to UCL, did geography degree.
And then the rest is history.
And the rest is history.
So what I'd like to unpick now is your transition from deputy head to the being the education consultant, and it's still new territory for you, and having been there myself, all the challenges that has. And then obviously we're chatting during the lockdown of coronavirus. We're in week 4 now, so that's going to be a huge challenge also for all the education consultants out there trying to make a living, as anyone in any sector or an industry. But can I just ask, what was the kind of decisions, the rationale behind you moving towards supporting teachers and schools?
So my transition out of school and into consultancy wasn't necessarily a sort of deliberate one. What happened was I was at my school, and like many teachers, I think, and maybe, and I don't want to generalize, but you know, particularly parents and mothers, I realized that I had been raising other people's children, and as a consequence hadn't been to a nativity, a sports day, and the real crux of it, the real turning point was, I broke up from term, and my daughter was at nursery, and my husband, who'd been the parent at home, said, well, why don't you go and pick her up from nursery? You never get to do that normally. Mm-hmm. And I turned up at nursery, ready, beaming, waiting to pick her up. And the lady opened the door and wouldn't release her to me because I didn't know what the password was. And it was like a light bulb moment. I suddenly thought to myself, I think maybe I might have to make some changes here, because I'm going to miss all of my children's childhood. And I realized that I was starting to resent the children in my care, because I was looking after them rather than looking after my children. And I was working at a boarding school at the time, so it's full on, you know, I was putting other people's children to bed still at 10 o'clock at night, and my children hadn't seen me. So that was sort of the turning point. And I decided that my husband, who's also a teacher, I sort of said, okay, you've had your time at home. I'd like to be at home with my kids now, and you can go back out to work. So he went back out to work to a local primary.
Okay.
And after a few weeks, he came back and said, I'm really not enjoying it. And I said, okay, I'll start applying for jobs again. but in the meantime, I was on LinkedIn, and I'd updated my profile, and I love LinkedIn, as I know you do too.
Yeah.
I just find it such a great platform for connecting with different people.
Yes, it is. That's where we connected, I think, first.
Yeah, it was. And I find it a really great community to be part of. But anyway, through that, I started getting quite a lot of consultancy work, really, rather than kind of seeking it out, it kind of came to me. And I thought, oh, I wonder if I could give this a go. I wonder if this might work. Mm-hmm. And of course, I had the buffer of my husband working. So he was bringing in a sort of steady income, which
gave
me...
What was your first job?
Sorry?
What was your first job?
Oh, my first job was a really unusual one, actually, but it really tapped into one of my very niche interests in education, which is the learning environment and the impact of the learning environment on achievement. Yeah. And there was a school design company who I really loved the stuff they were putting out. I thought it was really interesting. And I just contacted them and I said, I love your designs, but two, I really love your sort of philosophy behind how the learning environment can impact attainment, mood, well-being, all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them whether they had anyone in education working in their company, and they said no. And I said, well, I think you should, and I think it should be me. And so they invited me up, and I sort of became part of their team, and it was really that was really great. I still work with them now, so I love that.
And give me a timestamp for that job. When was that? So about a year and a half, 2 years ago?
November 2018.
Okay, so we've been looking at your website, theeducationconsultant.co.uk. Tell us how that started.
So what website?
Yeah, at what point did you think you needed to start to, I'm very interested in branding, as you know, at what point did you need to have your own website to promote the things that you do and the services that you can offer support for schools?
Well, I think, I mean, like you said, it's I'm hugely interested in brand and the way that people present themselves. And it's a little bit chicken and egg, because at that point in time, I really didn't know what I wanted to offer. So I felt like, should I be putting something out there so that people know how to find me? But if I put something out there and it's too generic, are they going to know what they're finding me for? So it was a lot of learning, a lot of conversations with different colleagues and other consultants. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time having conversations with people before I decided to put something up and out. Mm-hmm. And in the first instance, it was just about me as a person and kind of making connections with people and seeing what opportunities were out there. And then as I've gone on, I've sort of reviewed the website and thought, which parts work, which parts are the things I'm interested in, which are the bits where I get jobs for, and then kind of having a cull, just sort of regularly auditing what you're putting out there and seeing whether that's something that you actually make money from or have an interest in, or whether it's sort of redundant.
And how have you found the transition from receiving a regular monthly salary to now having to find work, make a living, prove your worth, and that transition between, I know when I struggled from being a teacher and people selling their wares to now having to do it myself and actually doing something that you believe in that is, you would do for free if you didn't have to chase the bills, but because you love your content. But how have you found that transition?
I found that incredibly difficult. I mean, I felt incredibly difficult, but also very energizing. I think that if having gone from 15 years on payroll and speaking to people who have spent their lives on payroll, it's such a different mentality. You know that your next month, every piece of work, every pound that's come in is because you've gone to find it and you've invested time and energy. And you're only going to get repeat business if you're any good. Whereas if you're on payroll, I mean, you can be a great teacher one month, have a rubbish month the next month, and you're still going to get paid the same at the end of every month. And I think that's really difficult for people to get their head around, that actually you've chased every pound that's come into your household. And yeah. I'm the only person earning in my house. So there's a huge pressure.
And what's the biggest challenges you've had in your first year?
Biggest challenges for me personally is that I am a really ideas driven person. I've constantly got things churning around in my head about what the next thing is. And actually I've had to be, maybe grow up a little bit and be a little bit more discerning with my ideas and kind of really examining whether that is a good idea and whether I should chase it and put my efforts into it. Or whether I can, whether that is part of my personality, and actually maybe that's part of my strength, is that I am an ideas person. It's basically sort of nailing down the things that work, I think.
Yeah, and being self-employed, who do you go to now for that feedback and that kind of critique?
That is one of the things I found the most challenging, which is, and I talk about it regularly on LinkedIn, yes, about how much I miss my staff room. I miss being with people. I mean, as teachers, we're very sociable creatures. Our whole business is working with people. And now I have no people around me. So I've really made an effort to try and make my new staff room and fill it with people who are doing similar things to what I'm doing so that I can bounce my ideas off them.
And, you know, obviously the virus has been a huge burden for everybody. I would assume that's had a huge financial hit on yourself and your work that you do physically in schools. With your ICT expertise, how have you adapted?
Well, I had two waves of huge anxiety. One was that I live in Cornwall, so I'm fairly remote anyway, which means that I have to make the effort to go and see people physically. And just before coronavirus hit, Flybe went into administration.
Yes, that's
and so
right.
I thought to myself, right, well, there's my business gone. I'm not going to be able to make any connections anymore. I'm not going to be able to go to schools. And then Corona came, and I thought, great, that really is the nail in the coffin. I may as well pack up shop now. But then I decided, I've kind of coined this phrase, it's a really rubbish phrase, but that I was going to pivot my gig. And what I mean by that was that I was going to just change slightly what I was doing so that I could adapt to the changing market. And like I said, I'm in Cornwall, so I'm quite used to working remotely. But not everybody else was used to working remotely. Whereas now everybody else, it's totally acceptable to jump on a Zoom call rather than see me in person. Yeah. So in a way it was to my advantage.
So you found yourself get busier?
Yes. Now I'm really busy. I've been helping, as I said before, my area of expertise or my area of experience was in prep schools. So I have a really good network in prep schools and independent schools anyway. But prep schools are quite unique in terms of thinking about how they're going to be offering remote learning. So I have built up a group of schools that I'm now working with to help them facilitate their remote learning.
And I like the term pivot my gig. It's not that cheesy. I think it shows some entrepreneurial spirit in you. Have you had people say that about you before? Or?
I've never thought that I was entrepreneurial until now. Until I started my own business. But now I think I am. I've always been quite a driven person. And I think lots of teachers are. You know, we're a hardworking bunch. We're self-motivated and we push ourselves. But take that out of the school environment. Some people aren't necessarily. But I think I've always been that way. But yeah, the entrepreneurial side of me has definitely come out and has been developed a little bit more.
I want to just ask about some insights and kind of wisdom you have now. So for busy mums out there or teachers who've got great ideas, but, you know, small families at home, what would be your best piece of advice for people that want to kind of start a bedroom business part-time to begin with and then go full-time like yourself?
Well, I mean, there's no better time to do it, really, because creating that shop front and that brand, as we were talking about before, is now so easy. I mean, we were talking earlier, but I made my own website. I didn't get an outside agency to do it. There's so much you can do. You could have a website up in a day. You could have your Instagram account up, your Twitter account running, your Facebook account running. So in a way, you've sort of created the beginnings of your brand, whatever it is, even if you're, I don't know, crocheting rainbows, you can easily set up a site where you're advertising your wares. It's so easy now. The thing that I would say that's harder is about having that focus about what it is that you're really doing and providing quality, because everybody can do this now. So,
and actually, how do you deal with the challenge that you said you're an ideas person? So how working on your own, you don't have a lot of the staff room around you. How do you filter those ideas? I know you've got a whiteboard recently, I saw on your Instagram, so you're doing a lot of brainstorming and filtering. What's your methodology for cutting out the rubbish to the ideas that might have potential?
So my absolute go-to tool before I had that whiteboard was a system that is called a Kanban board. I know people use a virtual version of that, like a Trello type thing. Yeah. But for me, I need to have the physical ideas in front of me. So along the top, I have, you know, to start, in progress, finished, invoiced, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And down the side, I have all the live projects, but then I also have projects that are just ideas, just the seeds of ideas. And I just keep them up there because I think having them there, if they haven't moved along that board in the last 3 months, then perhaps it's time to take them off the board.
Yeah, that's a good piece of advice. It's a bit like doing projects in school, isn't it?
Exactly.
And what are your insights from working with prep schools in particular before the virus? What kind of things were you, the work that you were doing, what were you starting to learn more of at a kind of system level, visiting more schools?
This is something that has been the best experience over the last year and a half through this, is because I've made lots of connections with people, it means that I get to go in and see all different types of schools. So I'm also a trustee of a very large multi-academy trust down here in Cornwall. And I've used that opportunity to go in and visit. I mean, they're predominantly primary schools. We have a couple of secondaries, but I've used that as a vehicle to go in and see what's going on in schools in my county, in my local area, and as well as visiting the schools I have existing relationships with and seeing them from a different point of view, rather than from my sort of teacher, with my teacher head on, from a senior leadership point of view or a governance point of view. So just that breadth of experience now has meant that I'm able to take cherry pick from different sectors and give advice on what people are doing, good practice that I'm seeing in a whole plethora of different schools.
And you mentioned, obviously, your expertise is developing remote learning platforms before the virus. So before the virus struck, again, what were your insights and day-to-day work in the schools that you were visiting? Common issues, common strengths that were kind of appearing?
For me, when I go into, particularly in prep schools, it's a really interesting kind of cultural place to be, and more so now since Corona has started, because the things that make prep schools unique is the sort of, well, one is the kind of whole kind of co-curricular stuff that happens all around it is definitely held up as being as important as the core curriculum. So all of that stuff that goes on around the edges of the curriculum that might be sidelined in other schools is like an absolute essential part of schooling for prep schools. And the second thing is specialist teaching. So when we've been talking about remote learning, I've said, can you think about, and this is, goes the same for any type of school, what is it that makes your school unique and how much of that can you still retain while being online? Mm-hmm. So for prep schools, for example, it's the specialist teaching. So I've really made sure that the people who are doing online teaching don't lose out, don't narrow their curriculum to just maths and English. Actually, what parents are looking for, or the reason they've come to your school, is because they get specialist teaching from year three up. Right. and to try and keep that going.
And what's been the shift since lockdown started, kind of mid-March?
For schools or for me?
For schools with remote learning specifically, because I would imagine the demand is increased twofold. But if we think of the schools that you are already working with, how has that work changed?
I think that for them, obviously, there's a kind of, they went through sort of crisis, like lots of schools done, that kind of crisis stage, like we've got to get stuff out, we've got to get stuff going, we've got to help our parents, help our students. And now schools are hopefully moving into strategic mode about how can we plan in a more measured way for the next few months. But also, and this is the part I think that's most interesting, is when we come back, what does it look like? What learning have we taken from this and how can we progress forward? But I think that's their focus has been, I mean, senior leadership teams are always sort of one step ahead there, and there's a bit of a lag. So there may well be teachers that are still very much in that crisis mode. But most people are moving towards a sort of strategic planning element about how they're moving forward in the next, well, at least 3 weeks.
And then, you know, whenever we go back to normality, what are your hopes for remote learning, online teaching, virtual CPD, those types of things when we get back to normal?
Well, there's a couple of things. One to do with, not to do with online stuff, some learning that I've done when I've been listening to teachers and listening to senior leaders is all the things they're putting in place now, not just to do with the way that students receive their learning, but also about how it's changed the culture of their school. I'd really like to see
schools taking that forward when we return to normal. So a small example of that is, at the moment, because everything is new, schools are in the rhythm of surveying often, surveying their parents, surveying their staff and pupils about the learning experience or how they're finding things or what their workload is like or how their mental health is. And we wouldn't ordinarily survey our teachers or our pupils or our parents as often as this, but I don't see why we shouldn't. You know, should we be checking in with our staff about workload or how they're finding the experience generally, or pupils about engaging in their learning? There's been so much discussion about how pupils engage in their learning now that I don't want to see that lost when we come back in September. But on the virtual side, as you said, for me, from a personal point of view, I'm really pleased that people are now viewing this as an acceptable way to, one, have training, two, have coaching conversations, three, receive support, because I think it works really well as a medium. And I've done lots of works with various size groups of teachers. I had, you know, probably 50 teachers on a call the other day, and it worked really well. There wasn't necessarily a barrier there to it. And what I really enjoyed about it was that I worked with one school over a full day, but I was able to differentiate that CPD for exactly what those groups of teachers needed. So it wasn't just one general day about something, it was really targeted, differentiated CPD.
And in terms of logistics, were you using Zoom or Skype or Hangouts? What's your medium?
I prefer to use Zoom, but obviously because I'm working with different organisations, I usually fit in with what they prefer or what their sort of vehicle is. So sometimes they're using Teams or sometimes they're using Google Meet, but I prefer Zoom. I just find it a really nice, I'm quite familiar with it now, so I find it a nice way to conduct it.
No, it is. Now, we've gone past the 20-minute barrier, and I want to start throwing loads of quick-fire questions at you, so you can't pause or hesitate, Julie.
Okay.
So you're ready for this. I normally put on some countdown music to give a bit of pressure, but we'll soldier on. Okay, here we go. What project are you currently working on?
Remote learning with prep schools.
Okay. What book are you reading for fun?
I don't read for fun. I only read nonfiction.
Okay. What are you reading?
The stress solution, and there's no chapter on a global pandemic. I'm really disappointed.
Okay, if I was visiting Sevenoaks for the afternoon, where should I go?
Oh, well, you should ask me where you should go in Cornwall, because I'm living in Cornwall. And there are so many places to go in Cornwall. I can't tell you. They're all beautiful.
If you weren't doing your dream job now, what would you be doing?
Oh, that's such a good question. I feel like I would like to be I don't want to be a drummer, but I've always had the hankering for being the person that starts off a massive gig with the ticking of the drumsticks.
Okay,
so nice. I just want to do that bit.
Okay. You could probably ask someone to let you hit the drumsticks. what's your biggest achievement?
Oh, I mean, I really should say my children, shouldn't I?
Okay, work-wise, what's your biggest work achievement?
Being brave enough to set up my own company, step out of payroll.
Okay. If I could ask you for your lift pitch in 30 seconds, what would it be?
Oh, my goodness. Ross, I don't even really know what a lift pitch is. Is that when I try and sell myself to you?
So the educational consultant, what is it?
The education consultant, it's me. You're buying me. It's my personality, it's my energy, it's my enthusiasm, it's my ability to read people, get under the skin of school culture very quickly, and understand what people need.
Okay. Top tips for people wanting to work in a prep school?
Or you have to be the jack of all trades. So it's, you know, not minding mucking in with absolutely everything. You're going to have to be serving lunch, boarding duties, do a bit of games. Can you do some maths? Can you take that kid to the, you know, just the same as being a regular teacher, but you're going to have to be a jack of all trades.
Okay. What's your next biggest idea that the world doesn't know yet?
Oh, I don't want to give it away. I've got a really, really good one. Can I share it with you after the podcast?
Of course, of course. Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
Ah, that is such a good question. I'd love you to interview a prep school head just to get that insight into what that world is like. I think that it's sort of shrouded in mystery, and I don't think it needs to be.
Yeah, okay, I shall do that. That should be straightforward. Where can listeners find out more about you, your blogs, your links, your website, things like that?
Yeah, my website is theeducationalconsultant.co.uk. I'm not much of a tweeter. I'm a sort of secret Twitter observer. But you can find me on Instagram. I'm very personable on there, and LinkedIn.
Yes, you are. Okay, thank you. Last question. What would you want to be your legacy?
What I want people to say about me once I'm gone is that she was a firecracker. She was a real firecracker. I don't know what my actual legacy is going to be. I don't know. Hopefully I made some people happy.
Okay. Thank you, Julie, for your time. It's been a real pleasure getting to know you. Good luck with how you navigate beyond the virus in your new life as the educational consultant. And thanks for your time and your wisdom.
Thank you, Ross.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.